Short reading from Matthew's Gospel, chapter 13. Another parable he put before them, saying, "The kingdom of heaven is like a grain of mustard seed, which a man took and sowed in his field. It is the smallest of all seeds, but when it has grown, it is the greatest of shrubs, and becomes a tree, so that the birds of the air come and make nests in its shade." Well, that's one of my favorite parables in the New Testament. I use it to put some thoughts together three or four times a year, probably. And the usual insight is, from small seeds come great things. And we talk about that process of seed sowing and so on. Well, today I want to reverse that a little bit. I want to talk about the great thing, the great shrub that the birds make nests in. And use that metaphorically as a kind of understanding of a legacy. And then work backwards to where the seeds come. So this little set of thoughts is called Seeds of a Legacy. Seeds of a Legacy. I'm on an email distribution list that the pastor of the church in which I grew up sends out notes from time to time. And this week I got a note from him referred to a couple of the members of that church that he said were 107 and 111 years old. Not literally, as it turns out, but some 16, 17 years ago, when the younger of the two of them passed on, they left the bulk of their estate to the church, and that estate has continued to grow, and their legacy continues to serve, and their presence and even their membership in that church is still vital and real. Well, I looked at the name of the people, and the woman of that married couple, also, in addition to being a benefactor monetarily of that church, was my first grade teacher. And I remember her in that church growing up, and certainly remember her vividly as the one who taught me to read. And I thought, that's another angle on their legacy. The legacy that they gave in terms of the bequest was one thing. But I also thought about her career as a first grade teacher and the probably close to 1,500 students over the years, me included, that she taught to read. It's one of my more vivid school age memories, the large easel sized version of our reading textbook, the old Dick and Jane series. The first word I learned to read was look. The book was entitled We Look and See. But the first word, look. And ever since I read that first word that day, I've used that skill every single day of my life. And who is it that's done more for us than the ones who have taught us to do that? Now, it took a long time, but I finally finished school. And it occurred to me that the fact that I wound up with a graduate degree was in no small part due to the teachings I've had from people who sowed seeds. You know, this legacy of, you know, whatever it's been that I've been able to accomplish in my life goes back to the words that we say. I thought about that. We take words for granted. Words that come to us in the books we read, the newspaper, through the air, and so on. And it occurred to me that these words are the seeds of a legacy. And I got to thinking about something that I posted on my website for my students as required reading. It has to do with the nature of words. And I wanted to simply read it. It actually comes from a comedian that put this together in 2002 about the words we say. In case you hadn't noticed, it has somehow become uncool to sound like you know what you're talking about or believe strongly in what you're, like, saying. Invisible question marks and parenthetical you knows have been attaching themselves to the end of our sentences, even when those sentences aren't like questions, you know? Declarative sentences, so-called because they used to, like, declare things to be true, okay? As opposed to the things that are, like, totally, you know, not. They've been infected by this tragically cool and totally hip interrogative tone, as if I'm saying, don't think I'm a nerd just because I've noticed this. This is just like the word on the street, you know, it's like what I heard. I have nothing personally invested in my own opinions, okay? I'm just like inviting you to join me on the bandwagon of my own uncertainty. What has happened to our conviction? Where are the limbs out on which we once walked? Have they been like chopped down with the rest of the rainforest, you know? Or do we have like nothing to say? Has society become so like totally, I mean absolutely, you know, that we've just gotten to the point where it's like just whatever? And so actually our disarticulationness is just a clever sort of thing to disguise the fact that we've become the most aggressively inarticulate generation to come along since, you know, a long, long time ago. I entreat you. I implore you, I exhort you, I challenge you to speak with conviction, to say what you believe in a manner that bespeaks the determination with which you believe it. Because contrary to the wisdom of the bumper sticker, it's not enough these days to simply question authority. You have to speak with it, too. You know? Like. The first word I learned to read was look. And it's not only an interesting word, it's also an imperative. And as I was pondering the seeds of this legacy that's become what I've managed to become as a teacher myself, has been to take that imperative and take it seriously, to continue to look for new ways of expressing ideas, to look for competing theories, to look for answers to research questions that, if they're done right, raise more questions than the original. Look. Seeds of a legacy. And I think back, her name was Margaret Otteson, and I will never forget her. And I give thanks that she was in my life. So also, not just the words we say, but how we play. How we play. This week put me in touch with another saint in my life. My grandmother's birthday was yesterday. She was 107. She spent the last 21 birthdays in a much better place. But many, many years ago, she taught me to play golf. And every time I do that, as Charlie and Victor and I did on Monday, I think about her. Not just, you know, to whatever degree, which is rather modest at best, skill that I have in playing the game, but how the game is played. And I thought of her especially because we would typically, Saturday morning was the time we would go, and she'd get two of her buddies and allow me to be the fourth. And even if I wasn't hitting the ball very well or putting it very straight, as long as I was putting the bag where it was supposed to be, not stepping in somebody else's line, playing the ball and the game according to the way it's supposed to be played, you can play well even if your skill is not high on that particular day. And that was the key learning. You play the game well. And I started something because of some harebrained idea that occurred to me about 2 weeks ago that relates to the golf game we played the other day, which you don't even know about. I posted that score as the first in an effort to establish an official handicap. Now, my handicap is generally my backswing, but there's a way of posting a score such that you are numerically rated as to your skill level. And the only reason I want to do that is that I have this harebrained idea that sometime within the next couple of years I might like to play golf overseas. And in order to do that, you have to present a handicap that verifies you're qualified enough to play some of these whiz-bang courses in Scotland. I don't know whether that'll happen or not. But I do know that I will play the game differently a little bit in the next 10 rounds or so, when it comes to establishing a handicap, because you want to do that right. And I thought about the one who taught me to play not just the game with the correct backswing angle, but with the correct mindset and the correct attitude. Because, and she told me this when I was a child, you can tell a lot about a person's character by playing golf with them. And that's true. I learned that as a caddy. I've learned it as an adult. And it becomes, all of those insights and all of those experiences become seeds of a legacy. This wonderful woman who I miss pretty much every day of my life has been in no small part a contributing factor to whatever it is that I have in the way of character. And that comes and goes. But the point is, those seeds of a legacy are revealed in how we play, the words we say and how we play. And finally, I think the seeds of a legacy come in what we do with with the next day in our lives. every day comes and goes. We win a few, we lose a few. Sometimes not much happens, sometimes enormously important things happen, but there's always the next day. What comes next? I was thinking about that with regard to Michael Phelps, who has done in the Olympics what I can't imagine any human being ever will come close to doing. And he's done doing that. 18 gold medals, 2 silver, 2 bronze. What's he going to do tomorrow? Well, it's hard to imagine, but somehow the seeds of his legacy, the gold medals and all of that, will take root and grow into something. And by golly, we'll all sure know about it, especially if it turns into something sordid, because the media will tell us in graphic detail. And hopefully that won't happen. But he will have to face what happens the next day. I thought it was kind of intriguing, the young woman, 15 years old, who won the 800-meter freestyle. I wrote her name down because I knew I wouldn't remember it. Katie Ledecky, the U.S. swimmer, as a 6-year-old, used to hang around the pool and hope for Michael Phelps to give her an autograph. And now they were teammates and she won the gold medal. Part of her legacy, seeds sown, watching others, particularly Michael. And that was part of it. But then I took note of a news story that was on Channel 11 and probably everywhere, that in light of the Olympics, and this happens every 4 years, it's not new, enrollments in gymnastics programs and swimming programs have skyrocketed. Little 4-, 5-, and 6-year-olds have gotten intrigued by this, and who wouldn't? Who wouldn't? Will one of them win a gold medal in 10 years? I don't know. Probably someone somewhere. Will it be someone in this room or someone in our town? Not likely. Possible, but not likely. That's not the point. The point is, in the wake of watching someone do something very well, boys and girls are taking the next day to try to emulate, to try to learn, to try to grow. Well, I think that is a measure of the seeds of the legacies that come to all of us. We are all the products of what we've learned, what we've been taught, how we've interpreted it. And in some sense, there will come a day when people will have us in their lives only as a memory. And maybe that memory is what Jesus is talking about as the greatest of shrubs. We'll be on vacation in the company of 4 of our 6 grandkids, one of whom, the oldest, is somebody that I've managed to have some time with on the baseball field. When he was here a couple weeks ago, we went to Hub City Fieldhouse in Lubbock and played around a while, you know. And he's a good little baseball player, and I'd like to think that maybe I've taught him a thing or two. But more than that, even, I would like to think that 50 years from now, there will at least be a small part of him that will remember that, well, we were the grandparents that took him to the beach, you know, or did this or that, or showed him a little something about character. Well, whether we did that intentionally or not, let me point out that all of us are showing kids a little something about our character because they're watching us, and we are the legacy that has come from the seeds that were sown for us, and the cycle of life continues to sow seeds. The smallest of those becomes the greatest of shrubs, and may it be that others' experiences with us, the things others have learned from us, and maybe most importantly one day, the things that others remember from us, become places where children can rest in our shade. Seeds of a legacy. Amen.